on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome to the Thursday, March 12th, 2026 edition of Invest Talk. I'm your host, Luke Guerrero, and I'll be with you over this next just about hour to bring you the stories that matter, summarize what happened in the market today, but most importantly, to answer your finance and investment questions. To that end, before we run down today's show topics and talk a little bit about how the market did, let's tackle this caller question now.
Good afternoon, Justin and Luke. This is Steve from Colorado, and I'm just calling if I could get your assessment on Dow Incorporated, ticker symbol DOW. It is a stock that I have a small position in, and whether you think I should continue to add to it or consider selling. Thank you.
Let's take a look at Dow Inc. It is a global materials sciences company that was spun out of Dow DuPont in 2019. This company operates in three major segments. They're packaging and specialty plastics, so think polyethylene. They're industrial intermediates and infrastructure, so polyurethane and construction chemicals. And then they're performance materials and coatings, so think silicones, coatings, and industrial solvents. Their largest business segment is that packaging and specialty plastics, about 51% of their business. Industrial intermediates, about 28% of their business. And then performance materials, about 21%. Now, year to date, this name has been absolutely surging after a prolonged period of really flat ranging and then a consistent downward trend. It's up 9.34% today alone, up 60.74% year to date, up 56.78% over the past 3 months, but even with this, only up 5% over the past year. So what's going on here? What is driving this stock forward? Well, one thing certainly is a prolonged commodity chemicals trough. Global polyurethane and MDI prices, they've been pretty depressed since 2022, due to overcapacity, primarily Chinese capacity additions, and weak industrial and construction demand. Local prices down 8% year over year in Q4, every segment declining. This is the core fundamental problem that the stock has priced in a lot of it, right? It's why we've seen this consistent drawdown since really the middle of 2024. There was a bit of a sentiment shock as well over the past year, when the dividend was cut. It was a 50% dividend reduction, which was announced alongside their Q4 earnings, which reinforced just how stressed the balance sheet is. And so they're doing this bit of a balance sheet repair in progress. They've sold off $3 billion in assets already. They've cut $1 billion in CapEx. They've had bond issuances. There's that dividend cut that I mentioned. So the management is aggressively trying to shore up in the range of $10 to $15 billion in total liquidity. So in the near term, solvency, it's certainly been addressed a bit. And the question is now earnings recovery and timing. So why is it up so much in really the past couple weeks? I mean, it was trading at $30 a share, $227. One of the effects is as a result of what is going on in the Middle East and what that might mean for their main product lines, i.e. chemicals, fertilizers, aluminum. We talked about it a lot already over the past week. All of these things that come through the Strait of Hormuz and what the supply side crisis does for overall price levels. And certainly that is one way for revenue to increase. But that being said, sales growth in the past 5 years, 0.7%. They actually lost money in 2025, projected to just turn a profit in 2026. And so even though you have this structural macro problem, do you want to buy it after it's up 9.34%? I would argue that if you have purchased it sometime in the past year, you're up pretty significantly. I would start to trim profits. But either way, this is a company that still has some fundamental issues and some structural problems, i.e. China's overcapacity and how much that is a structural overhang. And so given this run-up, the bear case seems to be in the medium to long term more likely than the bull case. So given these gains, I would probably look to start trimming a little bit on my position. That is a Dow, US, ticker DOW. Well, we got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's a little bit of what we have planned. My main focus point is about emerging markets, more specifically, the possible emerging market exodus when global tensions start to trigger capital flight. India stocks, for example, have dropped to almost one-year lows, while other emerging markets face similar pressures as this Middle East conflict drags on and sends investors fleeing to developed market safety. The capital flight pattern, in a way, is creating both significant risks for EM-heavy portfolios, but more importantly, potential buying opportunities for patient investors. Also touch on an announcement by the International Energy Agency, the IEA, that the Iran war is causing the largest disruption to oil in history. Another thing we'll talk about is fertilizer stocks and why they are jumping. Should we have time at the end of the show, the Fed unveiled that they are going to be easing capital requirements. What does that mean for Wall Street banks and for you as investors? We also have some voice bank calls ready to play, including one on trailing stop losses, another on CF Industrial Holdings, as well as some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. Now, before we head to a break, I do want to mention one thing, and that is InvestTalk Market Madness. I hope you've been telling your friends about our third annual InvestTalk Market Madness contest. Instead of basketball brackets, we make corporate brackets. We watch companies perform head-to-head in an epic daily showdown. InvestTalk participants can compete for the $1,000 grand prize and demonstrate their market prowess by locking in their stock victory predictions. And get this, if the contest winner is also following the InvestTalk YouTube channel, we'll bump the prize up to $1,500. So if you're ready to test your skills in this unique competition, don't wait. It's free to join, and the fun all starts at investtalk.com. Don't forget to submit your bracket by March 18th at 11:59 p.m. All right, we're going into our first break. Please remember, you can call anytime and leave your questions on the InvestTalk voice bank. If you're listening via our live stream or possibly on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, pick up that phone and dial 888-99-CHART. Hang on, because when we come back, we'll talk about today's market activity.
When you tell your friends about InvestTalk and they ask you why you listen, let them know there are many reasons, and one is parallel investing. From KPP Financial and InvestTalk host Justin Klein. Parallel investing means Justin invests right alongside KPP Financial clients. He makes the same trade for KPP Financial on the same day, at the same price, and the same percentages as KPP clients. There's no front running and no special treatment. In this way, Justin and KPP Financial share the same risks and the same potential for success. Parallel investing aligns the interests of Justin and KPP Financial with those of his clients. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are ready to answer your questions about parallel investing. And you can learn more anytime at investtalk.com. The official numbers are in. Now with 62 million downloads, InvestTalk. Listen live or download the free podcast. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk a little bit about the market today. U.S. stocks falling pretty sharply on this Thursday, closing near their worst levels as we saw a bit of a hawkish turn in the Iran conflict rhetoric and a big backup in treasury yields, and that combined to pressure risk on assets across the board. The Dow dropped 1.6%, S&P 500 fell 1.5%, NASDAQ shed 1.8%, and the Russell 2000 slid over 2%. Both the S&P and NASDAQ are now on pace for weekly declines. Really, the geopolitical picture, I mean, it deteriorated further. Iran's new leader, the son of the former Ayatollah Khomeini, said the Strait of Hormuz closure should continue. And President Trump said destroying the Iranian regime is a bigger priority than energy prices. The U.S. Energy Secretary indicated it could be a couple of weeks before military escorts for tanker traffic are operational. Despite steps to ease the oil shock, including a Jones Act waiver and a coordinated reserve release, none of it has really been enough to offset the supply reality. WTI crude surged nearly 10% to close above $95. Brent settled above the $100 mark for the first time since August 2022. That energy-driven inflation impulse is now hitting rate expectations pretty hard. The federal funds futures are pricing just 17 basis points of cuts through year-end, down from 53 at the start of the month. Treasury yields backed up meaningfully again. The two-year jumped 10 basis points. The curve continued to flatten. The dollar gained 0.5% on the day, one bright spot in the rate complex. Today's $30 billion 30-year auction stopped through by 0.7 of a basis point, contrasting with the trailing 3- and 10-year sales earlier in the week. Private credit again remained an overhang. Morgan Stanley became the latest to limit redemptions at one of its funds, following Cliffwater and JP Morgan's decision to reduce lending to the space. Tariffs are also creeping back into the discussion after the administration announced multiple Section 301 investigations not far ahead of Trump's scheduled late March visit to Beijing. Big tech was uniformly lower on the day, led to the downside by Tesla, Meta. Semis and the broader AI-linked trade sold off as well, while PE, insurers, investment banks, memory, home builders, again among some of the worst performers. The clear outperformer on the day, as you can imagine, I don't need to tell you. Energy, just on this crude move, with chemicals, exchanges, discounters, and grocers all holding up as well. On the data front, claims held steady at 213,000, and housing starts surprised to the upside at a 1.487 million pace, though building permits declined more than expected. The trade deficit narrowed meaningfully to $54.5 billion. Looking ahead, tomorrow brings a pretty packed calendar. We got durable goods, January PCE, the second read on Q4 GDP, JOLTS openings, and preliminary March Michigan consumer sentiment and inflation expectations. With oil above 95 and rate cut expectations collapsing, the inflation expectations number carries particular weight this week. All righty, let's go back to the InvestTalk voice bank for a question that came in earlier.
Hi, my name is Ernesto from Visalia, California, and I'm calling about a stock, ACGL as a ticker. And I'm calling to see if you have any revenue estimates and earnings per share estimates moving forward, see if you have any growth. I've owned it for about a year now. Just want to know if you see any growth in it. I think it's a good insurance company, and could you let me know your thoughts about it moving forward? Appreciate what all you do. Thank you very much. Have a good one.
ACGL is the ticker, and that is Arch Capital Group Limited. It is a Bermuda-based specialty insurer, reinsurer, and mortgage insurer. So they have three business lines: insurance, reinsurance, and mortgages. Over the past 52 weeks, it's been kind of ranging, only up 5.68%, down 1.77% year to date. They have been executing a share repurchase program. They repurchased about 5.6% of their shares in 2025. That was about $1.9 billion. And an additional $349 million through February of 2026. And that's helped to float the price. I mean, looking at relative strength, it's been pretty in line with the S&P 500 going back to 2020. Now, in terms of growth, net interest earned growth, pretty solid year over year. Looks like it's averaging 10%, though 2026 set to slow down a bit, with net earned interest about $17.2 billion, up from $17 billion. So growth has certainly slowed there. Earnings per share, a bit all over the place, though a solid 11.6 in 2025, set to come back down to earth a little bit to 19.4. But one thing that I really like is that they have had record underwriting profitability. 80.6% combined ratio. That is phenomenal. But it's not all good, right? They've also seen a bit of compression in their mortgage insurance. You have rising competition. You have normalizing loss ratios across the board in mortgage insurance, not just for this business, but other businesses as well. Overall, it seems to be trading at a relative cheap valuation, about 10 times forward-looking earnings. And given the growth over the past 5 years, I like it. That is Arch Capital Group, ticker ACGL. Thanks for the call. Headed into a break, still to come, my main focus point and more answers to your questions here on Invest Talk.
KPP Financial is excited to announce the third annual Invest Talk Market Madness Contest. Invest Talk participants can compete for the $1,000 grand prize. So if you are ready to test your skills in this unique competition, do not wait. It's free to join the fun. Visit investtalk.com and search Market Madness. Then submit your bracket predictions to enter.
So emerging markets just had their worst week since the pandemic. MSCI's Emerging Market Equities Index lost more than $1 trillion in market cap from its peak last Thursday to Wednesday's close. Currencies, bonds tumbled. And JP Morgan cut its overweight EM stance to market weight. They weren't alone. Citi halved their EM foreign exchange exposure. Korea's KOSPI had its biggest ever crash, down nearly 20% over Tuesday and Wednesday, before bouncing back almost 10% on Thursday. And this is all to say it's been pretty violent. And I know a lot of you listening are looking at your portfolios and asking the obvious question, should I be reducing my EM exposure this day? So let me walk you through this with a little bit of nuance, because the answer isn't as simple as the headlines make it seem. First, let's understand what just happened. Emerging markets have been having an exceptional year before this week. EM nations led by Saudi Arabia, Mexico, Turkey, Poland issued a record amount of debt in January. Equities were soaring. Korea's KOSPI had been the top performer in emerging equities, up more than 30% year to date, even after the crash, driven by the AI and semiconductor trade. Yield-hungry investors were pouring cash into local currency debt across frontier markets. Flows had been building for over a year. When the U.S.-Israeli strikes hit Iran, and therefore shut down Hormuz, what happened was predictable. The hot money had left. Hedge funds, non-specialist investors who had been chasing returns, they exited fast. The dollar surged, gold rallied, and everyone piled into cash. It was, if anything, not about economic deterioration. It was a mechanical unwinding of leverage positions and chip-heavy indices that caught the worst of the tech unwind plus the geopolitical shock simultaneously. So should you be reducing exposure? Here's a framework that might help you think about it. If your EM allocation is primarily through diversified ETFs like IEMG, VWO, SPEM, and you sized it appropriately for your risk tolerance when you bought it, the answer is probably no. Selling after a $1 trillion drawdown is usually the worst time to do so. You are locking in losses driven by panic rather than being driven by fundamentals. The people who made money in EM over the past year were the ones who held through exactly these kinds of episodes. If you're overweight EM because you chased the rally and now have more exposure than you're comfortable with, then trimming to go back to your target allocation is absolutely reasonable. But that's a portfolio management decision. That's not a market call. Now, with emerging markets are more resilient, or rather, are they more resilient during global crises? This is where it gets a bit interesting. Not all EM is created equal, obviously. And the current crisis, it creates clear winners and clear losers. The most resilient economies right now are commodity exporters. They benefit from higher oil, higher resource prices. Brazil is the obvious one. It's a major oil, agricultural, and metals exporter. Higher commodity prices support its terms of trade and current account. Latin American commodity exporters, they broadly are in better shape. On the other side, energy importing economies in Asia, they're very exposed. Korea, despite its rebound, is heavily dependent on energy imports. India, which gets a huge share of its crude through Hormuz, faces a direct supply threat. Pakistan, Bangladesh, parts of Southeast Asia, they are similarly vulnerable. Among frontier markets, the story is actually encouraging. Countries like Egypt, Nigeria, they reformed their capital markets and foreign exchange access over the past couple years. The fact that money is flowing out smoothly actually proves that the reforms are working. Investors can repatriate cash, which builds long-term confidence. That matters more than any short-term outflow. So is this a good time to buy EM ETFs at lower prices? Potentially, yes, but with conditions. EM equities will trade at roughly a 28% discount to developed markets with higher earnings growth expectations. That valuation gap existed before the crisis and has now widened. If you believe the disruption is temporary, measured in weeks, not months, then the drawdown is a buying opportunity. The veteran EM investors I'm reading are not panicking. They're not saying, I'm out. There are people on the sidelines waiting for exactly the kind of correction to get in. But the critical variable is oil. A prolonged period above 100 could change the calculus entirely. It would reignite global inflation, prevent EM central banks from cutting rates, and weigh on growth across import-dependent economies. In that scenario, the drawdown, it extends, and you want to be much more selective, favoring commodity exporters over importers. How do you balance EM risk with potential higher returns? The practical answer is diversification within your EM allocation. Don't concentrate in a single country or in a single theme. Broad-based EM ETFs give you 2,000 plus stocks across 20 countries, which smooths out exactly this kind of single country shock. There's also a structural shift happening that provides a long-term buffer. South-to-South investment capital flows from Asian wealth pools and Gulf sovereign wealth funds into other emerging markets. It's growing. These investors are far less likely to panic sell than Western hedge funds. The bottom line, don't sell into the panic if your allocation was right-sized to begin with. If you're looking for entry points, this is more attractive than 2 weeks ago, and size your position for the possibility that oil stays elevated and the drawdown has further to run. Favor commodity exporters over importers. Use broad diversification. What changes the price? And investing, a lower price for the same fundamentals is usually a gift. On the next Invest Talk, we'll look into nuclear power and how it's getting a geopolitical boost. But for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Luke Guerrero is here, and he's ready with answers to your finance and investment questions. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin and Luke. A couple weeks ago, you explained what a stop loss is. I was wondering if you could explain what a trailing stop loss is. Thank you.
A trailing stop loss is a stop loss that automatically adjusts upward as the stock price rises. It trails the stock by either a fixed dollar amount or a percentage and only moves up, it never moves down. So it locks in gains as the stock climbs. How does it work? Well, you buy a stock at 50, you set a 10% trailing stop loss. Let's say the stock rises to 60, well then your stop is moved to 54. If the stock rises to 70, your stop is moved to 63. If it drops down to 63, well then it triggers a sell. Now, there are pros and cons, the pros being, well, it lets winners run while protecting some gains. It removes the emotional, when do I sell decision. It's fully automated. You don't need to manually adjust it. On the other side, though, you can get shaken out on normal volatility. Then the stock recovers without you. Gaps down can execute well below the trailing stop loss price. Too tight of a trail, you know, 1, 2, 3%, well, then it's going to execute a lot. Too wide of a trail, 20%, you can give back a lot of gains before triggering. So that's what a trailing stop loss is. It's better for less volatile stocks because you can use tighter trails there. More volatile stocks, you need to give it wider trails. Typically 8 to 12% range is probably where you want to be. All right, let's keep things moving and tackle another voicemail now.
Hello, Justin and Luke. I hope you're both well. My question today is on General Mills. I believe the ticker symbol is GIS, George Idaho Sam. And I've been unhappy with the performance of this stock. I would like to sell all of it. Currently, it's about 3% of my portfolio. Thank you, and I hope you have a wonderful day.
General Mills, ticker GIS, is, of course, the branded consumer foods company that sells through retail stores. So it sells snacks, ready-to-eat cereals, meals, pet food, refrigerated food, frozen dough, yogurt, ice cream. I mean, it has a large portfolio of holdings. It is a global packaged food company. So Cheerios, Pillsbury, Nature Valley, Haagen-Dazs, Progresso. These are just some of their brands. It's had a rough year, down 15.27%. Had a rough 3 months as well, down 15.61%, although I guess 3 months is practically year to date at this point. And over the past 52 weeks, it's down 34.37%. It's come to the point where it's pretty much at its low price to forward-looking earnings over the past 5 years. So what's going on here? Well, I mean, volumes have declined. And this has been bad for the business. They hit a peak in May of 2023 of $20.094 billion in revenue. Over the past 5 years, the growth rate's been 2%. But revenue set to fall from $19.4 billion in 25 to $18.4 this year and then $18.1 the next year. At the same time, margins are falling from 21.2 in 2024 down to 18.1 this year and 18.2 the following year. Free cash flow down from $2.5 billion to $1.7 billion this year. And so what you're seeing is really poor growth, compressing margins, and a business that hasn't really necessarily done well. They've also had guidance cuts consistently. And so the persistence of these cuts, well, becomes a credibility problem. They reduced it each of the first two quarters of fiscal year 2026. And unsurprisingly, markets don't like that. And that's driven it to nearly a 30-year low multiple. I think, and certainly the fundamentals, the lack of growth, and the momentum are telling you this, that your inclination to sell is probably down the right path. That is GIS General Mills, Inc. Thanks for the call. We haven't tackled a question yet from the InvestTalk YouTube comment section question bank. So let's get this fresh question on ticker CNQ, which is Canadian Natural Resources. And the question says, hi, can I get your thoughts on CNQ? How does the Iran conflict affect Canadian oil and gas companies, specifically compared to others? Well, CNQ is Canada's largest oil producer and the second largest natural gas producer. It's a pretty diversified upstream E&P with operations across Western Canada. They also have some legacy assets in the North Sea, offshore Africa as well. They are doing very well year to date, up 42.33%, up 57.47% over the past 52 weeks. What has really caused this? Well, record production and low-cost oil sands compounding. 2025 was the best operational year in company history. They had very high utilization. Oil sand assets had very low sustaining capex once built, and so that leads to expanding margins. They also have reduced their net debt on their balance sheet. And given what's going on with the issues in the Middle East and the inability to get oil out of a region that has upwards of 25% of oil? Well, then naturally companies that have assets in other places are going to see their supply have an ability to be sold, and then also the increase in prices increase revenue as well. And revenue was already growing. Revenue in 2024 was $35 billion, projected to be $38.762 billion this year. And that's just talking about oil, natural gas, something that we have and will continue to talk about. Qatar is one of the largest producers of natural gas in the world. And so this company having that type of exposure, that diversified exposure to natural gas, certainly a benefit as well. So overall, you can see how this company has reacted given what's going on in the Middle East. But I do want to caution people Because the companies that tend to run up the quickest tend to give back gains the quickest as well when there starts to be a resolution. It doesn't mean that it's not a good idea to invest in oil companies. I think CNQ is a great company. I would just be careful about your position size for that reason. That is CNQ, Canadian Natural Resources Limited. Thanks for watching. So here's a second order consequence of the Middle East conflict. Because everybody's been talking about oil, but this one is going to hit consumers in a very tangible way. The war, it's choked off big chunks of the world supply of ammonia, of urea, of sulfur, of phosphates, the building blocks of fertilizer. It's also blocked roughly 20% of global LNG supply, which fertilizer producers in Europe depend on. European natural gas prices, they've climbed 60% since the strikes began. U.S. gas futures are up a more modest 14%, which is creating a massive advantage for American fertilizer producers. And investors have already zeroed in on this trade. CF Industries, which consumes huge volumes of natural gas to make nitrogen fertilizer, is up more than 70% year to date. One of the hottest stocks in the market, Mosaic, Nutrien, are each up over 30%. And so the thesis is simple. CF can raise prices to match global competitors who are paying way more for gas, while its own input costs, relatively stable. The wider the spread between US and European gas prices, the fatter the margins will become. But while that's great for fertilizer stock shareholders, it's bad news for American farmers. Prices for certain fertilizers have jumped about 30% from the disruption. And the timing, it couldn't be worse. This is when farmers are mapping out their spring planting. Many are in a precarious financial position after consecutive years of bumper crops that depress grain prices and Trump's tariffs that hurt export markets. What we're already hearing from the ground is that farmers are making substitutions. More acres will go to soybeans, which fix their own nitrogen to the soil and require less fertilizer than corn. Bayer, which sells crop seeds and pesticides, is expecting this shift and said it will hurt its bottom line since corn is a more profitable business for them. Other farmers are simply cutting back on how much fertilizer they apply and accepting lower yields. The ripple effects, they extend beyond the farm gate. If corn acreage drops and soybean acreage rises, that shifts the supply dynamics for both crops. It affects ethanol production, animal feed costs, and eventually your grocery prices. One silver lining, higher oil prices boost demand for corn and soybeans blended into biofuels, which is providing some price support for farmers, even as input costs rise. But for investors, the fertilizer producers are the obvious winners in this environment. But watch the ag supply chain more broadly. Seed companies, equipment manufacturers, and food processors will all feel the effects of how farmers respond to this cost shock. This is Invest Talk. Our work continues after 1 minute, so hang on.
KPP Financial is excited to announce the third annual Invest Talk Market Madness Contest. Instead of basketball brackets, Justin and Luke will be watching companies perform head-to-head in an epic showdown. Invest Talk participants can compete for the $1,000 grand prize and demonstrate their market prowess by locking in their stock victory predictions. And get this, if the contest winner is also following the InvestTalk YouTube channel, Justin will bump up the prize to $1,500. So if you are ready to test your skills in this unique competition, do not wait. It's free to join the fun. Visit InvestTalk.com and search Market Madness. Then submit your bracket predictions to enter. Get it done before the deadline, March 18th. At 11:59 p.m.
Hey, Justin and Luke, this is Josh from the UK. I had a quick question about my employee stock purchase program. I'm employed by KBR, Kellogg, Brown, and Root. I have a 6% discount with this employee stock purchase program, and I've been in it for about 2 years, and I'm not overweight in it according to my whole portfolio, but I'm just wondering what you think about this stock and kind of where it's headed the next few years. I appreciate any input. Thanks.
Take a look at KBR, KBR Inc., that is. It is a $4.7 billion science, technology, engineering, and logistical support solutions company. In terms of debt, it's about 2.7 in debt. So a decent amount of debt for a company its size, certainly. Over the past 52 weeks, it's down 27.36%, down 15.39% in the past 3 months, and down 8.48% in the past year. Revenue has been growing at a slow and steady pace, I would say, about 6.2% on an annualized basis, though most of that was really from 2020 into 2021. Then right, revenue growth actually turned negative. So there's a lot of volatility here in revenue growth. What about margins? Margins have actually remained relatively stable, a bit biased towards the upside, actually, growing from 7.7% EBITDA margin to 12.4% is where it's projected to be in 2026. At the same time, price to forward-looking earnings is at a very low figure, 9.3%. That is near the low of the past 5 years. What about free cash flow? Free cash flow is actually growing pretty steadily, up from $347 million to $811 million. Now, this company has two main businesses, their Mission Technology Solutions and their Sustainable Technology Solutions. So sustainable technology, think process technologies, licensing, engineering for an energy transition. Then Mission Technology, think defense, intelligence, science, and space. From a technical perspective, I mean, it doesn't look great. Momentum has been pretty poor since the middle of 2024. What's really been driving this is revenues missed. Stock has been derated by analysts because of that. And so for this company, I would probably be hesitant to buy in just given the trends. I mean, even a 6% discount, if you bought it a year ago, isn't really worth the fall off in a price that you've seen over the past 52 weeks. But I think the broader lesson is, in general, I tend to not want to concentrate and hold positions in a company that is also my primary source of income. Because if the company doesn't do well, and therefore the stock price is falling, then they have to do layoffs. There's a scenario in which you are both laid off and your big asset, concentrated asset in the stock that you've purchased through this purchase program in your company is devalued as well. Now, given what you said about there not being a lot of high concentration here, I'm not necessarily worried about that for you. I just think you can take a general lesson in that. And from what I'm seeing from fundamentals, from momentum, from growth, for now, I would be hesitant to buy more. That is KBR Inc., ticker KBR. Well, I know we talked about it once, but I want to mention it one more time because I am very excited about InvestTalk Market Madness. It's one of the favorite things I think that Justin and I do. We love setting it up. We love talking about it. The team loves it as well. And we would love for you to compete. If you want to compete for the $1,000 grand prize, $1,500 if you're a YouTube subscriber, head over to InvestTalk.com and fill out your bracket. Just a reminder, the deadline to submit your bracket is March 18th at 11:59 p.m. Headed into our final break, so get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
There are a few things that make KPP Financial special. One of them is parallel investing. This means they invest right alongside their clients. Here's how it works. When KPP Financial makes a trade for their clients, Justin Klein makes the same trade for himself and KPP. On the same day, at the same price, and same percentage. No front running, no special treatment. Learn more about parallel investing at investtalk.com.
The International Energy Agency published a report today that puts an official stamp on what we've been covering all week. They called the Middle East war the largest supply disruption in the history of global markets. And it's not hyperbole. The IEA, its numbers back it up. Gulf producers have cut oil production by at least 10 million barrels a day because the Strait of Hormuz is effectively impassable. The IEA expects world output to fall by 8 million barrels a day in March. That's a decline of more than 7% from roughly 107 million barrels a day produced in February To put that in context, the disruption from Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which was considered massive at the time, displaced far less supply than this. The production cuts are hitting all over the place. Iraq, Qatar, Kuwait, the UAE, Saudi Arabia. Kuwait, as we have already talked about, has started shutting a lot of production because their storage tanks, they're filling up. They literally cannot load tankers. Vessel traffic through the state crashed from an average of 138 ships a day to just 2 in a recent 24-hour window. And neither was a tanker. Now, there is a partial offset. Saudi Arabia is rerouting exports through its western Red Sea ports. They hit a record 5.9 million barrels a day through these ports on March 9th, up from 1.7 million, which is their normal level. Abu Dhabi's ADNOC is loading through the port of Fujairah, which connects to pipeline infrastructure that bypasses the Strait of Hormuz. Kazakhstan and Russia are also increasing output. Non-OPEC producers are ramping up where they can. But the math doesn't close. The IEA cut its forecast for global supply growth this year to just 1.1 million barrels a day. Less than half, down from 2.4 million a month ago. And remember, even with the rerouting, Saudi, UAE, can only push a fraction of their normal volumes through these alternate ports. The pipeline and terminal infrastructure, it simply was not built for this volume. Brent crude hit over 90 today after Qatar's energy minister warned oil could reach $150 a barrel in 2 to 3 weeks if the strait remains closed. WTI is above 86. These aren't speculative scenarios anymore. They're the base case if the conflict doesn't de-escalate and de-escalate quickly. For investors, this is the macro variable that dominates everything else right now. The oil price effectively determines the inflation outlook. Market participants agree. We talked about earlier in this show, the expectations for Fed cuts in 2026 absolutely crashing. We talked about fertilizer needing the inputs that come through the strait. We haven't even talked about another larger issue, Asian countries, this being a large source of their energy supply, the same parts of the world that are producing semiconductors. The ripple effects are likely to go throughout the economy beyond just your traditional thoughts about the cost of energy. For investors, this is and could be, without de-escalation, an inflection point. The inflation outlook determines the Fed, and the Fed determines where stocks, bonds, and the dollar go. Watch straight traffic data and any ceasefire signals. That's the only thing that changes this equation. Well, we did it. This concludes another episode of Invest Talk. Justin and I thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. As always, you can get those downloads fresh each and every day of the week on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen. While you're over there, please be sure to leave us a rate and review. It really does help us out and helps us grow this Invest Talk family. As I mentioned twice, don't forget, Invest Talk Market Madness is afoot. Get all the details at investtalk.com. And while you're over there, if you've been thinking about whether or not your portfolio is really doing all that it can for you, check out our strategies page, where you can sign up for a portfolio review, where Justin and I can sit with you for 30 minutes, for an hour, give you some advice, see if we can help you out. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial.
a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.